You're listening to the Sportsman's Nation Podcast Network, powered by Interstate Batteries. From your truck to your trail camera, Interstate Batteries has you covered. Visit your local Interstate Battery store today or online at interstatebatteries.com. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
Welcome to the Southern Ground Hunting Podcast. I'm your host, Parker McDonald, and this is episode number 26. Today, we are talking with Jared Schaefer. Some of you may know him as Flinging Arrows from his YouTube channel. We're talking about his awesome season that he had in West Virginia and in Ohio and in Wyoming. A lot of cool stuff in this podcast. Hope you guys will stay tuned. Enjoy the show. All right, guys, welcome to the first episode of Southern Ground in the year 2019. I am just absolutely pumped up about how 2018 was. You know, it was our first year as a podcast, and we started, I think it was in February. I think it was the beginning of February is when we actually started the Southern Ground Hunting Podcast. And man, 2018 just flew by so fast. I think we had a lot of great content that we were pushing, but I can tell you this, 2019 is going to be 10 times better. We got some really big plans coming, and I don't think you're going to want to miss it. I think you're going to want to be a part. We're just really excited about it. This week, me and Michael are talking to our buddy Jared Schaefer. A lot of you know him as Flinging Arrows on YouTube. He also has another YouTube channel called Hunt Appalachia. I think I pronounced that right. I'm not really sure how those guys pronounce that Appalachia. I've always said Appalachia in my head. I don't know. I don't know that I've ever said the word out loud until tonight when we recorded this podcast. But it was a really good episode, and we had a really good conversation. We talked a lot about some of Jared's tactics. You know, we are really firm believers in the hunting beast method of finding buck beds, finding beds, period, and hunting that way. It's just kind of what we've been really focusing on, and it was really good episode talking about that and how Jared uses those tactics to be successful in his own neck of the woods in West Virginia and in Ohio. And I'm really excited about you guys hearing this episode. But before we get into that, I want to give a shout out to our partners at Onyx Maps, at New Breed, at Tethered, and at Go Wild. So all of these companies are companies that we really believe in. We believe in everything that they do. But today I want to talk to you about something really cool that Go Wild is doing right now. So if you are a listener to the Southern Ground Hunting Podcast, I'm sure that you've heard us talk about Go Wild. If you don't know what it is, if this is your first time listening, Go Wild is an app just like any social media. Think of Facebook, Instagram, any stuff like that. But this app is geared towards you as an outdoorsman. If you're a hunter, a fisherman, a hiker, backpacker, if you like to cook wild game, anything you can think of is going to be on Go Wild. You can choose your own content. It's not about the amount of followers that you have. You can basically see the content from anybody who is a part of Go Wild, and there's thousands and thousands of people, like-minded individuals like you and I, on this app. So what you can do is go to the compass on the app. You're going to see a menu pop up and find giveaways. So press on that giveaways menu, and right now, Go Wild is giving away. They've teamed up with Garmin, and they're giving away a Garmin Fenix 5S Plus watch. It's a smart watch, and it's got a lot of really cool features. I could spend this whole podcast probably talking about all the features that this watch has. But what you do, go find that post, go to the compass, go to giveaways, find the Garmin Fenix 5S post, and follow the instructions to enter to win this watch. The winner is going to be announced on January 13th, so you only have a few days from the time that this podcast is released to go and sign up, enter to win this awesome watch. Go Wild does a lot of giveaways on their app. You can find it on the app. You can get subscribe to their email list. Get a lot of cool stuff. There's a lot of giveaways that they give away, from small things, you know, a couple $100 of value, things like this watch. I've seen bows, archery equipment, all kinds of stuff. I've even seen them give away all expenses paid trips, hunting trips. Really cool stuff going on at Go Wild. So if you don't have the app, go get it. If you want to sign up for this giveaway, follow those instructions and enter for your chance to win. That's all for our partners segment. I want to give you guys a quick warning, though. The audio, for whatever reason, in this recording on my end did not turn out really good. I can't figure out why. Something happened with my microphone during it, and I wasn't able to catch it in time. So just bear with me on that. Usually we have a pretty solid quality of recording. For whatever reason, this one was not that good on my end with my microphone. So you're going to hear some little small glitches that I'm going to try to fix. So if I do fix them, then disregard this part of the message. If I can't get them fixed, then you're going to hear those. So I think that's it. You guys, I hope you enjoyed this episode with my buddy, Mr. Flinging Arrows, Jared Schaefer. All right, everybody, welcome to another episode of the Southern Ground Hunting Podcast. We are super excited about this episode, because we get to talk to a guy who I've wanted to talk to for a little while. And I was having a hard time trying to decide whether or not West Virginia was Southern enough to have on the podcast. But it sounds like some of the questions that people have been telling me to ask you seem like West Virginia is pretty deep South. So we've got Mr. Jared Schaefer, as some of you guys may know him as Flinging Arrows. We got him here on the line with us, straight from West Virginia. Jared, how are you doing today, man?
I'm doing good, Parker. Man, thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. So, for real, like, after looking at some of the posts that you've made of your season this year, it was just kind of a no-brainer. Like, we need to get this guy on, because I think a lot of people get something out of a conversation with you. So, I really believe that.
Well, I can pass along what I know, but I can assure you I'm just like everybody else. Just, you know, get out there and hunt hard and get after it, but... Yeah, be glad to share my season with y'all.
Yeah, man, it'll be fun. It'll be a lot of fun. So we've also got Mr. Michael Pike, who is also calling in from a WMA, because he is still trying to make something happen on public ground. Michael, how's it going, man?
It's going good. I had $3 today chasing one doe.
Nice.
So it looks promising. Then I saw some more does. I actually saw probably 20 deer before daylight, so that's always good.
Well, man, just got to pull out the spotlight.
Yeah, I'd probably fit in, honestly. Nobody thinks twice about it.
So you were telling me that today you had those $3. They came in from a couple hundred yards away, right, and then closed distance pretty quick. Ended up working pretty close?
Yeah, all the way up to about 40 yards.
Dang.
And I was in the cutover, so I was originally just setting up there to basically plan for my rifle hunt, and I think it's going to be a good spot. We have a rifle hunt coming up. It's Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, if I'm not mistaken. I'm going to be able to hunt it on Thursday and Friday morning before I go back to work, but hopefully we can get it done.
So you're not going to call into work this week?
No, I'm not going to call in this
man,
week.
Man, I don't know. It might be a good week for it.
Yeah. Well, I called in last Sunday night for our, you know, little trip that we had planned for, my stepson and the nephews, so they could,
right,
go try to put one down. And so,
well, man, I really, truly hope that it happens for you on Thursday or Friday. Like, dude, I'm really pulling for you.
I hope it happens tomorrow, Thursday, and Friday.
Yeah, that'd be nice. That'd be even better. You need it, man. You need some time with the family for sure. So we've got, like, Jared, we've got, like, probably over a month. Let's see, today's the 8th. So we got, like, a month and 2 days left of the season. So are you completely done there in West Virginia?
Yep. West Virginia season just closed December 31st, and I'm tagged out in Ohio. So, yep, I'm done for the season.
Dang,
wow, December
man.
31st. Well, when did your season open up?
In September. Yeah, so like September 29th or something like that.
Wow.
That's
kind of a short season.
Not,
that's a short season.
Yeah, it really is. I'm kind of jealous of you guys that get to hunt in January and February.
Don't be, dude. Man, I'm pretty sure the divorce rate is higher in Alabama because of that long season.
Dude, I don't doubt that. My wife's about ready to kill me, so I'm kind of glad it's over.
Hey, I want to tell y'all a funny story that kind of has to do with that. So, today, I kayak hunt a lot, and I went to Kentucky this past weekend, and my trailer had some bad bearings on it, and I didn't want to take it on the trip, and so I had my kayak strapped to the top of my Hummer, and I totally forgot it was there this morning. Just out of habit, on my way to work, I pulled into a parking deck garage, and and it ripped my kayak all to pieces, man. Like my seat, it pulled the seat off, it pulled my bow holder off, just broke it all. Yeah, well, it didn't take my light bar off because I didn't have it, but it did pull off the rail blaze port that it goes into. Man, I've been pretty mad about it all day. I pulled it off of the Hummer today and looked at the damage, and man. So I was talking to my dad, and he was bummed for me too, but he was like, well, you know, I mean, at least you're tagged out. You don't have to worry about that. And he said, you know, sometimes God makes things work together for your good, which is scripture. And I was thinking, yeah, for like the good of my marriage, you know, like I'm sure not being able to go on a kayak hunt is going to be a good thing for my marriage, because I'll be able to stay at home now forcefully. So it'll be a good thing for my marriage for sure. But I'm pretty dang bummed about it, for real. Like,
yeah, that's not cool at
it's
all.
A big bummer. So, Jared, so speaking of being tagged out, did you tag out in West Virginia? I know you killed a buck, but I don't know how many buck tags do you get there?
So we get 3 buck tags in West Virginia. So I didn't tag out in West Virginia. The season just ended on me. So
yeah, that's what we get too here in Alabama, is 3 buck tags.
Okay. Gotcha.
And so I saw the one that you killed on video. Is that the only one?
Yeah, I killed one buck with a bow right before our rifle season comes in. And then I ended up missing one with a rifle on a kayak hunt. And I never did have another opportunity at a buck after that.
Okay. So let's talk about that buck, that one that you killed in West Virginia, the one that you killed like the day before the rifle season opened, right? I think you killed the one right before dark.
Yep. Yeah, it was a good 8-pointer.
Yeah. So I want to talk about your setup on that, because it was very, if you're not familiar with Flinging Arrows channel, or that was also on your other channel too, right? The one with Grant.
Yeah. Hunt Appalachia. Yep.
Hunt Appalachia. Yeah, that's what it is. And you have it on both channels, if I'm not mistaken. And if you're not familiar with those videos, you need to go and watch those, because they're awesome. Jared's production quality is absolutely insane. Does a really good job. Go watch those videos. But you go into explanation of this spot, of your setup with that, and I want to talk about it, because we've got a lot to talk about, and I think we just need to jump right into it and kind of talk about how your season went. So tell us a little bit about how you set up on that deer.
All right. So this spot is, it's a big hardwood ridge. It's been logged out since 2012, so the top is really thick, a lot of brush. It always seems like there's a good buck that stays in that area, kind of uses it as a core area, you know, year after year. So it's kind of a spot that I'll check out, and if there's fresh sign in there, I'll hunt it, and if there's not, you know, I just don't even bother with it. I hadn't been in there at all this year, and I'd been hunting other spots, jumping around, hadn't had any luck, and I just decided to go check this ridge top out and see if there was any rubs or scrapes or anything. So it was the afternoon of November 17th, I believe. It was a Saturday evening. I went out on that ridge, and there's kind of a four-wheeler trail that runs out the top of it, and it's kind of open. And the deer use that as a trail, as a runway, just to get in between, you know, the brush where it's really thick. And there was a scrape line opened up all the way down that road, super fresh scrapes, and a rub line coming out of the thickest part of that ridge where they normally bed. And it was fresh enough that it got me really excited because I hadn't seen anything that fresh. And I basically just kept following the rub line until I got close to where I figured he might be bedded on the backside of some really thick cover. And I found a tree to set up in. We had a southwest wind that day, so I set up downwind of the scrapes. And really, I thought the season, or my bow season anyway, was kind of over with because it was getting close to dark and I hadn't really seen much. And I heard the telltale sound of a deer walking, and just happened to look up, and this buck just comes walking right down the road, and he stops at 17 yards at the scrape that I was set up over, and shot him right through the heart, and he fell over on camera 15 yards away. So it was just one of those hunts that just worked out absolutely perfect.
Right. And so you said a couple of things on there. I thought it was really funny. In the video, you said something like, 5 minutes after I whined to the camera about not killing a deer today. It's super important, though, man. Like, confidence is everything for me in deer hunting.
Yeah.
And if your confidence is low, then maybe it's that you don't work nearly as hard. Maybe it's that you don't stick it out to the last minute. But the truth is that everything can change about your season in a moment's notice. Your whole season can change in 1 second.
Absolutely. Yep,
and
absolutely.
You sticking it out right there, it really said a lot about the style that you hunt and the way that you hunt, and a lot about how you persevere through even kind of the tough parts of your season.
Yeah, I mean, I've always been stubborn that way, I guess. Just stick it out until season's over with or my tag's punched. And I was honestly thinking about packing up, you know, right after I did that little interview on camera, and, you know, I just decided to sit there until it was too dark to shoot. And with just a couple minutes left to spare, I mean, it all came together for me.
That's really cool. And it was a heck of a buck too, man. I don't know what the quality of deer is like in West Virginia, but in Alabama, that would be a good buck pretty much anywhere you go.
Yeah. I mean, up here, that's a pretty good buck. I mean, we don't get, you know, giant deer up here by any means. You know, 140 inch deer here is a giant, and
right,
I mean, he only went probably 110 inches or so, but he was, you know, it's pretty good buck.
That's awesome, man. So were they, I saw in the video, he was you were basically hunting over a scrape, and that has been kind of something me and Michael in the last couple of days have been talking a lot about. Is, you know, I haven't really ever been super pumped up about hunting over a scrape because I always just assume that they're all made at night. Is that something you did on purpose, or did you just notice after you set up that there was a scrape there? Like, how did that work out for you that way?
I'm with you. I don't really hunt over scrapes because they're, you know, like you said, they're usually made after dark. I knew that on this ridge that the scrapes that I was finding were really close to where they usually bed at. So if I find scrapes close to bedding like that, I start to get pretty excited because there's a chance you might catch them, you know, right before dark like I did. But generally, I usually don't even pay attention to scrapes unless I can relate it back to a bedding area.
Yeah, that totally makes sense. Michael, I know you probably have a lot of opinions on that. What do you think about it?
Yeah, I used to have the same opinion as y'all until I hung a bunch of cameras and all these big bucks were working scrapes at like 10 o'clock in the morning. And so ever since that, I figured I might as well throw some sits at it because especially that Babe Ruth buck, I mean, he was so consistent. I mean, every southwest wind between like 9:30 and 11, I mean, he was in there during those, you know, 2 weeks of October, the very end of October and the very end of November. So, yeah. I don't know. Maybe it's just certain areas or something. I don't know. But there he was.
Yeah, I think it's
the most most consistent I've seen.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, one of the things I've been trying to learn, and it's really hard to do actually, is try to find the difference between like a community scrape and just like a single buck scrape. I thought I've figured things out and I really haven't. But one of the things that I really learned was that there's a couple of spots that I know that I hunt that are just community scrapes where a bunch of bucks are using it and you can just tell. Have y'all found that those tend to be more productive during the daylight, or would those be more of a nighttime kind of area?
In my area, I would say so. Yeah. To be honest with you, the area that I hunt, scrapes are, I really don't find a ton of scrapes, like usually one or two, and they're usually pretty close to bedding. And I don't know, I can't really explain why. Maybe because the buck to doe ratio is so messed up, but maybe it's just this area too. I'm not real sure.
Yeah. It's definitely, Michael, you could probably speak to it as well. Like, I was in Kentucky this past week and it was my first time back to Kentucky since the rut had already happened. And obviously in a place like that where you have a higher deer density, and Ohio is probably similar for you, Jared, but you tend to have a lot more buck sign scrapes and rubs and things like that popping up everywhere. Whereas out here, it's, I'm not going to say it's a rare find, but you can go out and find them, but you can go out to Kentucky and they're just everywhere. You don't have to know anything about deer hunting to find a scrape or a rub. And I don't know if I would rather not have as many and be able to pinpoint some of the areas or have more like in Kentucky. It seems like it'd be harder to pin down a buck when you have more bucks on like that. But you also go out there and you see more deer. I saw more deer this past week and weekend in Kentucky than I've seen in Alabama all season.
Yeah.
It's just an interesting thought is like for you with that specific buck, he came in right before dark, like right before shooting light ended. And that probably had a lot to do with that scrape being there, you know? And so sticking it out until that last moment was a pretty important move for you.
Yeah. I would say so for sure.
So when you're looking for areas like that, Jared, in the video you talk about like going, you went to one ridge and there wasn't a whole lot of deer sign. And so you just kept going until you got to the next ridge. Were you doing all of that with the knowledge that there was bedding, where this buck was bedded at, or was it one of those things where you got to all the sign and then kind of put the pieces together?
That ridge kind of holds two different bedding areas. And if there's a buck using it, there's usually pretty good sign on one side of the ridge or the other. So, you know, I was just going in with the plan of hunting the freshest sign that I could find. And if I didn't find any, I was going to go to a whole new area. You know, I don't really like just throwing a sit somewhere if there's not a whole lot of sign to go off of or intel. So, you know, I just basically went in with, you know, with my saddle on and was just planning to set up on whatever sign I could find.
I gotcha. Which is something Michael could probably speak on, something we've been talking about doing maybe more often, is finding the most recent sign and setting up over that.
Yeah, I really like the sign. I mean, that sign doesn't lie. I mean, if it's if it's there, then, I mean, it's not like, you know, some squirrels coming down and making a rub or something. So.
And that's something that's really tough for guys like us who are, you know, hunting the beast style. It's just kind of the way that we hunt. And Jared, I know that you're all about it as well. And maybe it kind of sounds like you're in a similar situation as us, where you're kind of realizing that it's not nearly as consistent in places, which is, it's not going to be with smaller deer density. But are you finding yourself stepping back a little bit from the buck bedding type scenario, hunting buck beds or specific or single buck beds? Are you finding yourself coming back a little ways from that and leaning more towards hunting recent sign? Or are you sticking pretty close to the buck bedding still?
It depends on what part of the season. If it's during early season when the deer aren't moving really far, I'm sticking as close to bedding as I can. And I don't really target a single bed because that's just really hard to find. But I'd like to try to find areas that, you know, it's like a smaller core area where I know there's at least one buck. Sometimes there's two or three. But it seems like here in the early season, if I can find those small areas, they're going to hold several different bucks. That's just the way it always seems to work out in the early season. As it gets closer to the rut, you know, I'm hunting more for the fresher sign. You know, I'm still thinking about where they may be bedded at, but I go, you know, more toward the sign during the rut.
Yeah, and I think that's something that we get a little bit messed up on when we start hunting like a beast. You know, I know for me, I don't know if every guy's like this, but I tend to overthink some things sometimes when it comes to buck bedding, especially during the rut. And, you know, I think there's definitely a balance that you have to keep when it comes to hunting buck beds, especially for the rut in that part of the season where, you know, sometimes your buck bedding isn't going to be your most promising spot. And that's a tough pill to swallow when you've been spending all summer finding buck beds.
Yeah, I'm with Jared on that one. I'm with Jared on that one because, I mean, especially if you're in a lower deer density area, I mean, you could have, you know, a really good bed worn down, you know, to the dirt, and you could throw every sit, you know, over the whole entire year, and you may still never see that deer. But yeah. I think getting those core areas, it really ups your odds, and, you know, focusing maybe on, say if like food's down below or something like that, and you've got a long skinny ridge, you know, or spur that drops off into that bottom, you know, that could be like a good area. You know, if the bedding's up top, you know, you could just, hunt like a travel corridor in between the two, just make sure you push close to bedding.
So how close, Jared? I know you talk about it a little bit in some of your videos. How close are you usually trying to get to the bedding in that early part of the season?
Early part of the season when we still have a lot of vegetation, you know, leaves aren't falling yet, I like to get as close as I can possibly get. I've got one area where I can get 50 yards from where these bucks are bedding. And, I mean, it depends, obviously, on the terrain and the cover and all that, but man, if I can get under 100 yards, I feel it ups my odds a lot.
So
I agree.
Do you find your bucks bedding up? If I remember correctly from your video, it seemed like you had a little bit of bluffs. Is that right? Like outcropping,
yeah,
like rock,
yeah,
outcropping and stuff. Do you find them bedding?
Yep.
High or low or both or.
Around here, they bed pretty typical of what, you know, that top third. You know, there, we do have some bluffs here, some rock cliffs, and usually around the rock ledges and stuff, we have mountain laurel, and that mountain laurel stays green all year, and it's thick, and those bucks love to bed in that stuff, and they'll usually bed on the edge of it, you know, kind of the downwind side of it, and, it seems to me like if you can find a patch of that mountain laurel that's on that top third of the ridge on the, you know, the downwind, the leeward side of the ridge, I mean, it, you know, it's almost guaranteed to hold a buck or two. That's just the way it seems.
Yeah. We have the same thing up there in Bankhead, where we do a lot of our hunting. Maybe not so much on the southern portion, like where the National Forest is, but definitely up there in the WMA, right. It's a lot of steep ridges and bluffs, and that mountain laurel is right there on that military crest, and
yep.
It's a pain to get in there and hunt it. But I think it would pay off.
Yeah. And you know, we talk to a lot of people that hunt the similar areas as we do. And as you do, Jared, you know, I don't know exactly mileage, how far you actually are from us, but I think we're actually looking at a lot of, especially across the South from where we're at, you, to the East, you got Georgia and you got the mountains there in the Carolinas. You got a lot of that hill country type terrain, and West Virginia is the same way. And so it all kind of fits that same hill country terrain features. And one of the things that I've found interesting about your setup and kind of the way that you did it, because it's really hard sometimes for us to, especially for guys in this type of terrain, to, you know, you're really just giving your best guess where that buck's going to go from his bed. One of the things I thought that was very interesting that you talked about in scouting that area, or one of the areas that you shot a buck at in one of your videos. It was a pretty big 7-point that you killed. You were talking about going in there and scouting it and finding a real faint rub line from the bed, and that you followed out. I think basically you got down in the bed, looked at where the buck could see, and found the rub line going from that bed, and you set up out of sight from that bed, but on the rub line, which really worked out in your favor, which is a testament to scouting, I would say.
Yeah, for sure. You know, that spot has always been, I'm looking right now at all my mounts on the wall. Of all the mounts I have, I'd say 3/4 of them have come from that very spot right there. And, you know, I'd always hunted it wrong and come in from the top. And, you know, this was before, you know, I took the wind into account and everything like that. And, once I figured out how to access that area from the bottom, you know, with the wind in my favor, my success just skyrocketed. Basically, it just took me a while to figure that spot out. And, you know, the access isn't easy. It's way easier to come in from the top, but to come in from the bottom, I mean, it's a lot longer walk. You got to walk up a really steep hill. And, yeah, once I found that exact bed and looked at that old rub line, because you know, trees get scarred up from years of, you know, rubbing. That's exactly what I found coming out of that. And, it pretty much just gave his travel route away, you know, cause that rub line had opened up, and I had pictures of him, you know, I had pictures of him near the bedding area and probably a half mile away. So I knew that he was dropping down out of that bed headed, you know,
so have you killed all of your, deer in the evening, or like when you're setting up like that, or do you hunt them in the morning, try to stay away from them?
Yeah, all of them have been in the evening. Now that I've started to target, you know, buck beds in the early season, I don't even hunt them in the mornings. I'll hunt, you know, like a safe spot that's, you know, that I can get in and out of without bumping them. But yeah, they've all been in the evening.
Okay.
That's interesting. We talk a lot about that, a lot of times out here, it feels like the mornings is just the time when the deer are on their feet, like pretty much throughout the whole season for us. Michael, would you pretty much agree?
Yeah, outside of maybe like the first 3 or 4 weeks of the season, when they're still in that bed to food pattern, it's always better to hunt in the morning. They just don't move before dark. No, I've never found them move before dark down here. But especially during that first few weeks of the season, they seem to move further down here, and they you know, before the pressure gets in there, because nobody really bow hunts down here for the most part on public land.
Yeah.
You just about have it to yourself. So they're real at ease and everything. So, I really like, you know, going after them in the evenings, during the first few weeks of the season. But once gun season comes in, it's, mid morning, like around 10 o'clock in the morning. If you don't get something, if you don't see any movement,
yes,
you know, the first 30 minutes of daylight, 45 minutes of daylight, then, you know, that next window is usually around, you know, midday, yep, sometime.
Do you find the same thing?
I would agree with that. Yeah, and when I say early season, I'm talking before October 10th. I try, if I'm going to kill a buck early season, it's usually before the 10th of October. After that, it seems like it just gets harder. I don't know if it's because of my pressure or whatever, but yeah, as it gets later into October, I definitely like to hunt the mornings. And like you said, mid-morning is usually pretty good.
Yeah, we've kind of see the same thing. You know, every buck that I killed, well, I killed one buck around 6:40, 4:45 in the morning, that first light, but after that, every other buck has been in that mid to late morning for sure. So
that buck I missed, that buck I missed last week was 10:41.
Yeah, we haven't talked about that, Mike.
No, we haven't.
We haven't talked about the miss.
I kind of didn't want to talk about it until I was ready.
Yeah, so Jared Michael sent me a text. You know what? I'm just going to read it to you. This is how, and I'm sure that a lot of guys on that are listening to this would relate to how Michael felt and the things that he said to me, but when I read it to my wife, she kind of gave me kind of like a funny look, like, really, really? That's how you feel about deer hunting? Is that serious? Hold on just a second. Let me find this text. There's a lot of encouraging messages that I sent to Mike after that to try to ease the blow. All right, here it is. Here it is. I mean, so he sent it to me at 6:20 p.m. on January 1st at 6:20 p.m. So, I mean, that's like a long time after 10:41 when this actually happened to be texting your buddy and telling him about it. So Michael said, so I missed my chance today. I really don't want to talk about it just yet, but he was a good one. And I was like, I told him that makes me feel, well, I'm not actually going to say what I said because it wasn't appropriate
this year. So
yeah,
that's okay.
I usually miss plenty. One or two every single year, unfortunately. I don't know what it is, but I just I can't shoot. I just can't shoot worth the clip. It doesn't matter.
How many people have you put on deer this year, Mike?
Everybody I've taken.
Man, that's pretty funny.
Yeah.
So I showed my wife that text the other day, and I was down for you. Like, I said it in a way that I would say something serious. I was like, baby, Mike missed a big deer tonight. And she was like, oh, that sucks. And I said, like, no, like, it's a big deal. Like, this is a big deal. And she was like, okay.
When you do all of this prep work, you know, like, you know, postseason scouting, and then you know, this year my plan was to practice more, you know, with my bow. And I practiced more with my bow, and I killed both deer with my bow, but once gun season rolled around, I don't know what, you know, what happened. I guess I should have practiced with my gun too a little bit more. I mean, it was an offhand shot, and it was between 150 and 200 yards. So, I just got through hiking up a hill with all of my gear. So,
yeah,
it's rough.
Yeah,
it's pretty tough.
Yeah.
I hate it for you, man. I really did. I was bummed. I don't even remember what we were talking about right there. We got off on the subject of Mike's deer. Oh, we were talking about the late morning movement of
right. Yep.
Especially this time of the season, when you start getting into the season, that late morning movement is pretty important. And I don't remember who it was that was talking about it, but somebody's told me a long time ago sometime around when I started hunting public land was the best time to be in the woods is when everybody else is getting out of the woods, because you're getting all the pressure that's pushing all the deer, getting them back up on their feet. And so I've tried to live by that. You know, with the kayak, a lot of the times the places I'm hunting aren't really where other people are at, so it doesn't matter that much. But man, I've just found it to be one of the most beneficial times to be in the woods. So I guess y'all would all agree with that.
Yeah, late morning movement, you know, those, you know, big mature bucks, they'll wait till those does filter back through, and then they'll get up and go and cruise and check those trails. And I also think there's, you know, you hear a lot about the thermal switching, and it almost seems like there's two different times that it switches. You'll feel like an initial little bit of a lift earlier in the morning, you know, like around 8:30 or so when those does first come through. But there's just something weird that happens, you know, around 10 o'clock in the morning. All the, you know, wind and stuff is way up in the treetops. It's just one of those things you just have to feel, you know, by being out there.
Yeah.
Yeah. I completely agree with you. And yeah, on the topic of missing and the thermal switch and mid-morning movement, I actually missed a buck, early November here in West Virginia. I was sitting on a hardwood ridge where these bucks like to cruise through. And I'm thinking it was about 9 o'clock in the morning. This nice 8-point comes cruising through right through my shooting lane. And, I drew back and executed a perfect shot, only I didn't see the limb. It was right in front of my bow, about 5 feet away. So I smoked that limb and shot right over that buck's back. But yeah, he come cruising through right about that time.
So we actually did a podcast just on thermals. If anybody's listening to this and maybe you don't know what thermals are, or you want to learn a little bit about it, we did an episode with Nathan Protz, and that was 7 episodes ago. It's called Understanding Thermals with Nathan Protz, and it's a really good one that we did. If you want to dive deeper into what we're just talking about with thermals and mid-morning movement, when the thermals switch and things like that. So, Jared, we talked a little bit about how you like to get pretty close to the beds if you can, but to be able to do that, you know, you got to stay pretty stinking quiet. So getting up into a tree. So you kind of mentioned a while ago that you hunt from a saddle. What are some of your methods with that that help you get into a tree a lot quieter?
Yeah. So I use the tethered Manis saddle, and I climb with climbing spikes most of the time when I'm on private land, or, you know, when we can use them. And yeah, just sneak in there, you know, as slow as I could possibly go, and climb the tree. I guess I've just done it enough that I'm pretty quiet at it. And I've actually climbed a tree with the spikes with deer 30, 40 yards away, and, you know, they don't know that you're there. So, and that saddle, I mean, there's just no metal to clang around. And I think that's huge. I think a lot of guys overlook that. You know, it doesn't take much sound to tip off a buck. And, yeah, the saddle just makes it easier to do that.
That is so true. This is my first year as a saddle hunter, and man, it's just been absolutely incredible how quiet you can be getting into a tree. And I'm really bummed. You know, I mean, there hasn't been anybody, maybe Michael, you can answer this. Nobody has confirmed to me whether or not on public land out here, if you can actually use like climbing spurs. Do you know, Mike?
Not that I'm aware of. You can't, but I mean, I haven't actually, you know, asked, but you're not supposed to use any kind of screw ends or anything like that. So I'd assume it's the same.
Yeah. I would assume that. I don't necessarily understand it, because a climber seems to do just as much damage as climbing spurs, but it is what it is. So Jared, do you enjoy it? Is it a pretty easy thing to get into the method of climbing spikes? And I know you talk about it a lot on your channel, and a lot of guys seem to be interested in it. Is that something you found pretty easy to do?
Yeah, I mean, I got a set, and I climbed the first time. I only made it about 5 feet, and it scared me pretty bad, so I had to climb back down. But, you know, I climbed again, and I went a little bit higher, and I felt a little bit more confident with them. And the third time, I was like, you know what, if I'm going to use these things, I'm just going to use them. So I went out to hunt, and I climbed 30 feet that evening, and I've been sold on them ever since. That's been my main method for the last 3 years.
Have you had any scares using them as far as like slipping or getting close to falling or anything like that?
Two or three times I've had a spike kick out on me. It's usually the same type of tree. It's either a really hard bark oak tree or like a real thin bark maple tree. That seems to be the ones that you've got to watch and be careful on, because the wood is just so hard that the spike doesn't go in very far. So right. If you pick one of those trees, just keep that in mind and make sure you can kind of feel when the spike goes in, and you kind of know when it's got a good bite. So certain trees you got to watch, but other than that, I've never really had any mishaps with them, you know, other than just the spike kicking out a little bit. So nothing too bad.
Man, that just sounds so much easier than carrying sticks in everywhere, and it seems like it'd be a better method to me. I'd love to try it, but I can't.
And it would be worth given the people that run each individual WMA, whatever you call them, you know, give them a call and ask, because I know that up here it says in the regulations that you can't use them. But in many cases, I've gotten the okay to use them, you know, just give them a call and ask them, and sometimes they don't have a problem with it. So it's worth checking into.
So on your regulations there in West Virginia, are your regulations like very specific, like no climbing spikes, or does it say something like vague, like don't damage a tree or something like that?
Yeah, basically no tree damage. It's kind of vague, so.
Okay. And that's what ours says too, and it kind of is where a lot of guys get confused about what's actually legal or not. But I think one of the things that I'm actually going to do is give these places I hunt a call and see if that's something that I can, in fact, do or not do, and then try to get it in writing, depending on what they say.
Yeah, for sure. Yep.
All right, man. So moving along. So I don't know which deer you actually killed first, but you had some out-of-state success too this season, right?
Yeah, I started in Wyoming chasing mule deer. Killed a good muley out there. That was my first trip out west. Went out there for the early rifle season. Did a backpack trip into the high country. And, I killed a great buck the first day, and my buddy killed one as well. And it was just a epic trip. I mean, I can't wait to go back out there. It was so awesome.
That video that you did is on your channel, right?
Yeah. I filmed the whole thing and made a film out of it. And I was actually just watching it today, just kind of reliving the memories. But, yeah, it's something I'm pretty proud of. I think it turned out pretty good, and it was definitely something I'll never forget.
And it looked like it was a really good time. I watched it, I guess, right when you first put it out, and then I just recently watched it again, and man, it looks like a blast. Is it totally, I'm trying to think of the right way to say it, so I have a hard time justifying spending part of my season going out west somewhere when I could be taking time off work or whatever to hunt whitetails more here. Is it something that you did pretty easily? Like, were you all about it, or was it a tough sacrifice for you to do something like that when you could be chasing whitetails back home?
I burned 8 days of vacation, which is a good bit for me, but 100% worth it. I would do it again in a heartbeat. If that was the only hunt I could do for that year, I would have been completely happy with it. I mean, I would encourage anybody to try it at least once. Yeah, it was that good.
Dang. What do you think, Mike? You think we should do it?
I'm down.
I think it'd be fun, you know, to try
just
it at least
just
once.
Just the scenery out west is it's awesome. You know, I lived out in Colorado for a little bit, and just the mountains. I mean, it's just, guys, just nothing like it.
Yeah, I think it'd be cool. I think it'd be a lot of fun. So, was there a lot of strategy going into that, Jared, as far as where bucks were bedded or anything like that? Or was it kind of just like best looking spot? Is that kind of how you did it?
Yeah, I really used a lot of my whitetail tactics on bedding and stuff like that. And I watched a lot of YouTube videos just kind of trying to figure out what kind of like vegetation types that you would see a lot of deer in these videos and stuff. And I just kind of aerial scouted and on X maps and tried to find areas that may have been overlooked. And, it was really funny because I picked a spot on the map. It was the very first spot that I looked at, and I spent probably a good 2 months looking for other spots, and I never really could find anything that I liked better than this spot. So we just went for it. We drove out there, hit the trailhead. We hiked in, camped exactly where I marked on the map. It worked out perfect. And, we found two good bucks within a half mile of camp the first night. And I ended up shooting my buck about 1,000 yards from where we had the tent pitched. So it just worked out. It's kind of unbelievable how good it worked out. I don't know if I got lucky, but I definitely used a lot of whitetail, cyber scouting tactics for that hunt.
So that was in Wyoming, right?
Yeah, western Wyoming. Yep.
So what did it, if you had to guess, what would you say it cost for you to go to the DIY kind of style of hunt in Wyoming?
With my tag, food, and travel, I had about $1,000 in it altogether.
Well, that's not bad at
all. That's without all the gear that I bought, you know, because I kind of geek out on gear, and, you know, I like to have good stuff. So I spent a decent amount there, but you know, that stuff I can use for every other hunt of the year. So I don't really count that, but yeah, I had about $1,000 in it minus the gear that I bought.
Man, that sounds like a pretty cool deal for you. So guys, if you're listening to this, Jared, is that video on both channels?
Yes. Yes, it is.
Okay. So go watch that. It's called, it's like a unique name.
Called Acclimate, Adapt, and Overcome.
That's it. Acclimate, Adapt, and Overcome. It's got a real cool thumbnail on it and everything. You'll see it when you get to the channel. It's a really neat video. Go watch that on the Fling and Arrows YouTube channel or Hunt Appalachia. Is that how you say it? Appalachia?
Yep. Hunt Appalachia. Yep.
That's it. Yeah. So you started off your season there, got a good mule deer. So what happened after that for you?
Yes. I come back to West Virginia and, just kind of put my bed hunting tactics into play. I had several encounters with really nice bucks, just inches from, you know, getting a kill. I had a really nice mature 9-pointer that I'd located. He was using this bedding area. I actually saw him on an observation sit right outside this bedding area, and I watched what he did, and I moved in the next day, and he did the same exact thing, and I had him at 22 yards just with some branches and stuff in the way, and ended up not getting a shot at him. I got on another good buck on public land, had him at 25 yards, no shot. I missed a buck. So I got up into late October. I did end up killing the doe. Then I moved on to Ohio, which I usually do during the rut. And I can kind of go over my hunt in Ohio. Hunted there. Let's see. What was second week of November, I went over for 5 days and several shooter bucks. I mean, just same deal. Just, it was like they were, you know, they'd skirt out of range or brush blocking them or whatever, just couldn't get a shot. And I had the biggest buck on our place under 20 yards the very first day and didn't get a shot at him. And yeah, it kind of shut off after that. It was pretty slow. And then the morning of, I think it was November 12th, really nice buck come cruising in, 15 yards, heart shot him. He runs 80 yards and falls over dead. And I hear a buck, or I hear something coming behind me, and I turn around, and that big buck that I've been after is standing at 15 yards with no clue that I'm there, and I've already filled my tags.
That's the way it works, man. Always.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, it's funny, but I'm kind of glad it worked out that way. It gives me something to look forward to next year, right?
Right, exactly. And so is that on private land or on public land?
Yeah, we lease some 62 acres over there. It's pretty small, okay. But it's right in the middle of a really good area. We've got really good surrounding properties, so it sets up really nice.
Man, so 62 acres. How many of y'all are on that 62 acres?
So there's four of us on the lease, but at any given time, there's usually only two of us there. So the way it lays out is we have really good access to every spot. So we kind of keep the pressure to a minimum. It's not too bad. So if you hunt it smart, you know, it's pretty good. But, yeah, it's not really big, but it's just, yeah, it's got a lot of edge to it.
Yeah.
A lot of different blocks of different cover types, and it really works out nice.
So do you find, like, that where you hunt in West Virginia is super different from what you do in Ohio as far as your tactics and things that you're using and finding buck bedding and just deer bedding in general? So I know for me, like, we went to Kentucky and I hunted Florida this year and Texas, and all compared to Alabama, like, everything is totally different. So are you finding, like, similarities right there versus Ohio and West Virginia?
The area that we hunt in Ohio is actually pretty close to the West Virginia line. It's not too far, but the terrain is very similar. Cover types are similar, you know, so the deer move a lot of the same way. So that part's, you know, pretty much the same, but just the deer quality is just so much better. I mean, if you put in 5 days of hunting over there, you're going to have an opportunity at something, you know, usually, you know, not always, but it just seems like if you put your time in over there, you're generally going to get a shot at something. West Virginia's in that regard is just a whole lot harder.
Right. How far, like, mileage wise is where you hunt in West Virginia from where you hunt in Ohio?
It's only about a 2-hour drive, so it's not too bad.
So that's what's so crazy to me is that only 2 hours can separate some of the best deer hunt in the country from something that's average or below average in West Virginia. That's just crazy. So do you think, Jared, that has something to do with, like, the laws? Like, you guys can shoot 3 bucks in West Virginia. That's pretty steep. Like, that's a lot of deer. We do the same thing here in Alabama, but, you know, do you think that has contributed to why the deer population is so much higher in Ohio?
Yeah, it's 1 buck limit. There's no rifle season. There is a shotgun and a muzzleloader season, but they're fairly short. So West Virginia has a 2-week rifle season and a 3-buck limit. So that, I think that's the difference.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Ours is like 3 months long. 3.5 months long.
We have, like, it's like November the 21st or 13th or something like that, somewhere in the middle of November.
Yeah, it's usually like the third week in November, like around the 20th, 21st.
And so and it runs through like February 10th, and that's just our rifle season. Our bow season is only like a month longer than that, like in the middle of September. So,
wow,
man, I would really like to see Alabama eventually. I don't think they'll ever do it because there'd just be like a ton of mad hunters. But I see the quality of bucks that Alabama could have, you know, if we had a less liberal bag limit, you know, like I think with a little bit shorter of a rifle season, first off, maybe not as liberal bag limits, I think we could see a lot higher deer numbers. I sound like a hypocrite because I took full advantage of that the last few years killing three bucks. But, you know, I'd love to see something like that happen where we could go do a little bit of work on improving not just the quality of deer, but the number of deer, where you could take a guy out for the first time on public land who's never killed a deer and they'd have an opportunity to kill one.
Right.
I think that would be really cool. I think, yep, it would be beneficial for everybody.
Yeah, I mean, all I was saying is even within our own state, we have four counties in the very southern end of West Virginia that are bow only, and you can kill one buck. And the quality of the deer down there is absolutely unreal. I mean, 200-inch bucks, every year somebody's killing a 200-inch buck down there. I mean, it's pretty common thing. It's unreal, just the difference. Yeah.
Mike, it's kind of like, you know, the WMA that we hunted in Alabama, it's only open for like that first part of the season for like 9 days. They only open for like 9 days. This year they opened it for 16, but normally it's only nine, and it's bow only. And just the quality of deer that are out there, it's insane. We went scouting in there, and it was like, what did you and Andrew filmed like 9 bucks that day, right?
Yeah. What? No, it was 9 bucks in one bachelor group. And they were all together. Like, all besides one were 8-point or better.
I mean, you see that kind of what could Alabama actually produce, and it's hard not to wonder a little bit sometimes what could happen with that.
Yep, for sure.
Well, dude, so we're getting up on an hour here, but I asked a question on the Saddle Hunter Facebook page. And if you are a saddle hunter and you're listening to this, or you want to know more about saddle hunting, I would highly recommend going to Facebook and finding the Saddle Hunter group page. And man, everything you could possibly want to know is going to be on there. Also on the Saddle Hunter forum at saddlehunter.com. But I asked on there if anybody had any questions for you, Jared. You are an admin of that page, which is a pretty big deal. So, I just got made a manager on the page, and seeing how many people want to join that page every single day, it's insane, dude. I don't know how y'all did it just you and Greg.
It's crazy, yeah.
So, the first comment is ask easy questions. That's from you, Jared. So, you wanted just some easy ones. So I'm going to ask these real quick. I'm just going to ask you to give like the quickest answer that you possibly could just to kind of end this podcast. Okay. So mayo or ketchup?
Ketchup.
Definitely ketchup. I'd go ketchup as well. All right. This guy asked for your hunting locations by GPS coordinates. Are you willing to give that out?
Yeah. Sorry, buddy.
All right. So one of our own, Mr. Tyler Malone, he asked you to talk about your climbing methods while using a saddle. So you don't have to go into full detail, but what are the different methods that you use to climb while you're saddle hunting?
Yeah, so the climbing spikes, climbing sticks, and the preset bolts are probably my main three. I've also done the wild edge steps, one stick method. I'm thinking that's about it.
So you did your own DIY sticks, correct?
Yes. Yep.
So, did you do like a video of that on any of your channels, like a how-to or anything?
No, I didn't. I didn't make one. But if you follow the DIY Sports on YouTube, he has a video, and I made my set pretty much the same as his. So if you want to check his out.
Okay, awesome. So Tyler, I hope that answers your question, man. All right, so moving on, this guy Dave says he wants to know how you do scent control and your favorite feature to hunt, like terrain feature. Are you doing anything for scent control?
I do absolutely nothing.
All right, Dave, there you go.
I've tried different things. I've done, I'm just not consistent enough with it, really. I play the wind. I try to pick the best tree that works with the wind and the thermals. I throw milkweed continuously, and I just really try to tailor my setups to what the wind is doing in that location. So you can't really go by the weather channel. You just have to get out there and figure out what it's doing at that spot and then go from there. And that's what I do.
It's perfect. And that's pretty much same thing I do.
Yeah. And I think he asked what my favorite terrain feature was.
Yeah.
I'm going to say a bench on the leeward side of a ridge.
There it is. I would have to agree with that. Especially this year. I killed my biggest buck this year like that.
Yep.
So can you explain kind of what a bench is? Somebody who maybe isn't familiar with that, what that is, and also what a leeward side of the ridge is.
Yeah, so a bench is basically just any flat spot on the side of the ridge. They don't have to be very big. I've found buck beds on some pretty small benches. Any flat spot that's near the top third, or, you know, the military crest of the hill. And leeward side is basically just the downwind side of the, you know, the predominant wind, which is southwest here. So any northeast or north side of the ridge is usually pretty good.
Yeah, and I go into detail, guys, if you're listening to this, on one of our videos. Jared goes into detail on one of his videos of his setup on a buck bed with a buck that he killed, and it's really good. I go into a little more detail, too, on our most recent video on the Sportsman's Nation YouTube channel in early December. The buck that I killed, the biggest one I killed this year, was almost the exact same setup. So if you're interested in learning more about that, check out those two videos. Also, check out the huntingbeast.com forum if you want to know more about that. So here's some of my favorite. Greg Godfrey asks, why are you such a bad hunter? Do you have an answer for that?
I am a bad pig hunter. So we did Saddlepalooza last year down in Fort Stewart, and I hunted for like 3 or 4 days, and I never even saw a pig, so... I'm a bad pig hunter. I would totally agree, Greg.
All right. He asks, was it your sister or your cousin that stood you up at the prom? He can't remember.
All right. Say it again. Say it again. You broke up.
I said, was it your sister or your cousin that stood you up at the prom? I think there's a West Virginia joke in here somewhere.
It was my sister. Yeah. For sure. He's picking on us, West Virginia boys.
So, how many banjos do you own? Greg asks.
Six.
Six. Do you really have any banjos at all?
No, I don't. I'm a guitar player, so.
Yeah, okay. All right. So, he asks, why is Grant so much better at saddle hunting than you?
He's not. You know, Grant's a good friend of mine, and maybe he'll listen to this. I don't know. I've tried to teach him all that I know, but man, he just does not listen very well. So he did kill a buck this year, so maybe I'm rubbing off on him.
Yeah, I just watched a video. Did he actually kill two bucks this year?
Yeah, he did actually. Yep, he killed two.
I saw one just recently that he shot. The antler fell off of it when he was recovering it.
Yeah.
The antler fell off of it. That was pretty cool. All right.
Yeah.
Greg's got one more question for you, and he says, why is he allowed to talk in public with him being a filthy ginger and all?
Same reason bigots are allowed to talk in public, Greg.
So for anybody who doesn't know, that's Greg Godfrey, and he is one of the founders of the Tethered Mantis, G2 Outdoors. We've had him on the podcast. Really good dude. One of our favorite people. I'm pretty sure all these are joking questions, but maybe just a little bit of seriousness to them all. But, you know, I don't really know that any of it was actually about hunting at all.
Yeah.
So I'm a little disappointed. Well, man, I guess we're gonna end on the question about you being a filthy ginger. I'm just kidding, man. But for real, it's been a good time talking with you. And, man, Mike, do you have any more questions for Jared?
No, I don't think so.
Great.
Maybe we can go up to Ohio one day or West Virginia and do a hunt with you.
Yeah, man.
Yeah, man.
I think that'd be
tight.
Yeah,
come on up.
Listen, if you're taking us to that 62-acre honey hole, then we'll be there first of the season next year. I can
all
say
right,
that
man,
with confidence.
Come on up.
No, but for real, it's been a really good time getting to talk to you. Is there anywhere where our listeners can find out more about some of the stuff that you're doing? Can you kind of point them in that direction where they could follow along with you?
Yes, yeah, so on YouTube, I actually run two YouTube accounts. So Flinging Arrows is my oldest one. I had a lot of hunts that go way back on there since I started self-filming. And I run another one with my buddy Grant Lemon. It's called Hunt Appalachia. And we kind of do a joint thing on there where we both upload videos. And yeah, there's some pretty good hunts on there. So get on there and check them out. Hope you guys like them.
Fantastic. Well, Jared, it has been awesome getting to talk to you. Thanks so much for coming on.
Yeah, Parker, thanks for having me on, man. I appreciate it.
Well, that is going to be it for this episode of the Southern Ground Hunting Podcast. Big, huge thanks to Jared Schaefer for coming on. You guys, make sure to go check him out on Hunt Appalachia and Flinging Arrows. Also, Jared is a very big personality on the Saddle Hunter Forum, on thehuntingbeast.com. Lots of places that you could connect with him. So go and do that. He's a great guy. He's got a lot of knowledge. He's very successful. And I can pretty much say with confidence that this is not going to be the last that you hear from Jared. As far as we're concerned, we're going to be talking to him a lot more in the future, doing some things with him. Trying to think if there's anything else that you guys need to know about. And I don't think there is. Y'all, if your season is still going, if you're here in Alabama with us, I know you guys still have a lot of the season. A lot of you guys still haven't even got to see the rut yet, and that is going to be coming up soon for you. So I wish you guys the best of luck. As always, big thanks to our partners, people that support us, believe in everything they do. That's Tethered, New Breed, Archery, and Onyx Maps, and Go Wild. Again, go and check out the giveaway that Go Wild is doing right now on the Garmin Fenix 5S watch. It's a really cool giveaway. If you guys are at ATA show this weekend, I hope you guys are having fun. I am not going to be there. Michael is not going to be there. We've got work and things to do. We're super bummed about it. But if you are at the ATA show, hit us up. Let us know what cool products you are looking forward to coming out this year. I know there's going to be a lot of cool stuff this year that I have already heard about. So let us know about those things. Check us out on YouTube. That's at the Sportsman's Nation YouTube channel. We've got some cool videos on there, some pretty successful hunts that I've gotten to have this season. It's been a great season. So check us out there on the YouTube channel, on Instagram at Southern Ground Hunting, at Facebook at Southern Ground Hunting. Keep up with the things we're doing. We're doing some giveaways. We're doing some cool stuff. Like I said, there's a lot of cool things coming up in the year 2019. Hope you guys have kicked off this year with a bang. Hopefully it's been awesome. I can only promise good things coming in 2019. So, with that said, God has given you dominion over the birds of the air, the fish of the sea, and the beasts of the earth. So make sure you go and exercise that dominion. We will talk to you next time.